Tax fraud is not a problem for the IRS alone. Many state revenue departments also face the same issues, fraudulently obtained refunds. Some of the states have come up with solutions, though. A case in point is Indiana. With a population of 6 million, Indiana's scale is way smaller than that of the IRS. But the state found a good strategy for licking the problem. At an ID fraud conference, I spoke with Bob Dittmer, Deputy Tax Commissioner for the Indiana Department of Revenue. He points out the state normally receives about 3.2 million returns.
And then one year, we did some data analysis, and we discovered that, we got 3.3 million returns this year. Wow, we must have gained a lot of population. But we went to the demographics and, no, we didn't. We got 100,000 fraudulent returns. You know, that's where you do your forehead slap and you say, dagnabbit, we need to do something about this. And that's what generated our interest in really getting better at combating fraud.
What was the nature of these fraudulent returns? What was the motivation?
The fraudulent filers were after refunds. Clear and simple. They wanted somebody else's refund, or they wanted to create a fake personality and get money out of state coffers. So they would either steal a legitimate identity, file a return as if they were you or me, and get my refund or your refund, or they would create a completely fraudulent identity, make the numbers look rather average, but, you know, there's a refund, $400, $500, $600, $700, $800, and try to get that money, which is really not real money, but it's going to come out of the state coffers. The general fund's going to pay for that, and that's a loss to the people of Indiana.
Were you able to discover this before fraudulent payments were made, or had you already let the cat out of the bag, so to speak?
Well, the good news is we caught it before the whole cat got out of the bag. But, you know, we're not as sophisticated as the crooks. And quite frankly, we're sure that some of it got out of the bag. Absolutely. Quite frankly, even right now, we're pretty sure they're tricking us somehow. One of the differences here 2.5 years on, we're much better at catching that so that they may get one or two through, but we're going to find out how they're doing it really quickly, and we're going to combat that.
And before we get to the techniques you're using to try to prevent this, were you able to determine where these might have originated? Was it from Russia, from China, or right at home in Indiana?
Well, they're actually from all of those places. Our initial identification was they were coming from Eastern Europe countries, but the more we dug in, we found fraudulent returns coming from everywhere, including Florida and Arizona and Maine and you name it, and it's out there. Now, one of the tricks is it's all coming in electronically. Crooks aren't going to go to the effort of filling it out on paper. That's just too much work for them. So they can also spoof IP addresses. So what looks like it's coming from Arizona might not actually be coming from Arizona. It might be coming from Romania or Bulgaria or Albania. So you have to develop these cyber sleuth skills to try to track back. And it's very difficult. Even the FBI will tell you it's a tough row to hoe.
All right, so you got 100,000 new tax returns that you knew were fraudulent. What did the department begin to do at that point?
Well, we recognized very quickly that we had to do two things. First of all, we had to protect the taxpayer's refund. Always remind our folks, that's not our money, that's their money. That's people playing by the rules. They did it the way they were supposed to. They overpaid us. We owe it back to them. We've got to get it back to them. And we don't want the ID thieves stealing these refunds. So we have to put some protections in place to protect that. But just as importantly, we need to protect the state revenues. The money that's in the general fund that is being used to run the state, to provide the services that the state provides to its citizenry is really important. Every fraudulent return that gets through, every fraudulent refund that we issue is money out of the bank, and we'll never get it back. Nobody ever gets that stuff back. So what we started to do was to find tools that would help us. We started initially by contracting with a company that was able to give us some identity information. So here's what we did. We extract the basic identity information off of electronic returns, name, address, that sort of thing, and we send it to this service. They run it through their databases, and they come back and tell us in simplistic terms, this is a known fraudulent person. This is a fraudulent return. Don't do anything with it. They also can tell us this is a perfectly good return. We can't find anything wrong with this identity. They're not looking at the return now, so there may be plenty of things wrong with the return, but the identity is valid. And then there's this middle category, which we call suspicious. And it's the suspicious ones we have to do something with. So initially in the first year, that's where we went. And it saved us an enormous amount of fraudulent returns going out the door. Just amazing. $88 million total. About $50 million of that was specifically identifiable as resulting from this identity tool that we were using.
We're speaking with Robert Dittmer. He's Deputy Tax Commissioner for the Indiana Department of Revenue. And so if a return has all the information that otherwise would trigger a return, what can this company, this contractor, what do they know, what do they add to it that can say, well, maybe this isn't really coming from that person?
Well, they go out and buy databases from everybody they can buy a database from. So they buy credit card databases, bank information if they'll sell it, something as simple as magazine subscription information, so they can validate address information. Does this name really belong to that address? And so it's really a big data thing. Nobody should be scared about big data. Big data can be good as well as bad. And in this particular case, you know, big data has become a bit of a white knight for us in this regard, making sure that we can validate identities. But of course, as in all good things, this too must end, because we got really good at that. And guess what the crooks did? They went somewhere else, because it was too hard, in their world, it was too hard to do business with Indiana. So they went to states who weren't quite as sophisticated as we had gotten and hit them up. So the following year, we went from $88 million to $15 million. Well, trust me, it was only $15 million because they found it too hard to get their fraudulent returns through us. But there's still states out there that hadn't gone this route, and so they were easier pickings. So what do criminals do? They go the easy route. Of course they do. They don't want to work for a living. That's why they're criminals.
All right, let's get back to Indiana. Did you devise a system whereby every return is run through this test before you act on it?
Exactly. The returns come in. Every day we send a file to our vendor. The vendor runs it through. It literally takes less than a day to get this data back. Comes back to us in those three categories. If it's good, boom, into our system and we work it. If it's bad, boom, off to our fraud team, and they try to start sleuthing out who are these people. And if it's suspicious, we ask the taxpayer, through a letter, to take an identity confirmation quiz. Literally ask them to go to a website, secure website, or call us on the phone, either one, whatever they like, and we ask them four questions. These are questions that only the real person can answer.
And this is based on the information from the Bureau that has already laundered, if you will, the return.
It's based on the same data that they have in their huge database. Exactly. So, for example, one of the questions might be, you bought a new automobile in 2010. What was its make? Now, a crook is probably not going to know that, but you know that because you drove that bad boy off the lot very proud that you bought your first new car. You can answer that question. The crook probably can't. That said, as we progress, the crooks are learning how to get that data too. And so that quiz cannot be the final line of defense. It can only be the first line of defense. So now we've gotten more sophisticated. Now once we get the identity information back, we then run it through a series of heuristics that try to identify patterns. So we too have data. We know that you filed with us for the last 10 years. We know where you live because it's on your returns. We know basically what your income was. We know what bank that you wanted your refund to go to, because you had to tell us that. So now we just run that through and see, are you consistent this year? If you are, then you're still you. But what if the address changed? Or what if suddenly after 10 years of you banking with one bank, suddenly you've identified a different routing number for your new bank? Well, that's a little suspicious. We should ask you, is this really you? We think it is, but we're going to send you a letter and ask you to take the quiz. So the important point here is, and it's a very important mindset, we don't tell people they're crooks. We don't ask you to verify your identity. We ask you to confirm it. We're assuming you are who you are until it's proven otherwise. You, the taxpayer, get the benefit of the doubt. And that's important when we talk to people about this. We're trying to be part of the solution, not part of the problem.
And a final question, were there any legalities involved in using these external databases for citizen or public purposes? Did you have to use, say, get some legislation passed, or did you have to get the imprimatur from, say, the Attorney General?
Well, in terms of Indiana legislation, we already had the authority to do that sort of thing. I can assure you we got about 352 lawyers to look this over for us just to make sure we weren't straying, because, you know, we'd try to get it right. We really try to get it right. And so we wanted to make sure this was an appropriate methodology, and everybody said it was. So we didn't need legislation. We needed gubernatorial support because, of course, it costs money. But the governor was all for that. We've got to protect our taxpayers' revenues. We've got to protect the state's revenues because we need that money to provide the services we're charged by our citizenry to provide. So it's an important role that we have to take on.
And it sounds like for those that might want to embark on this, whether at the federal or state or municipal level, it's an ongoing battle. You don't ever rest on your laurels, and the tools you have are the tools you have.
Well, that's absolutely a perfect point. We have a team that meets every morning at 9 o'clock, and they go over what did we learn yesterday, because we fully anticipate that they're looking for new ways to get at us. Why wouldn't they? There's too much money out there. So we have this team that looks at our take, as it were, the day prior. What have we learned? What changes can we make? And we literally make changes sometimes on an hourly basis if it's necessary.
Bob Dittmer is Deputy Tax Commissioner of the Indiana Department of Revenue. Share this interview with colleagues. Go to federalnewsradio.com/federaldrive and click share with friends.